10, chapter 62, the meeting of Usa and Aniuda. 62. 61, not the meeting of Usa and Aniuda. 61. Yeah, I thought that it's not, it didn't sound right. That was quick. Okay, so 61, chapter 61. Lord Balaram slays Rukmi. It's a fun chapter. So let's see. Vidyangava is going to turn to Sanskrit for us. And it's 1 through 3 still. Summary and one text 1 through 3. Okay. So, why don't you go ahead and lead us in a chanting to the young Prabhu? Take number one. I'll read the chapter summary afterwards. Next one.
Sri Sukha Vacha.
Sri Sukha Vacha.
Ekaika Shasta Krishnasya. Putram dasa dasa balaha ajijanan navaman itu sarvatma sampada sri sukho vacha ekaika shasta krishnasya
ekaika shasta krishnasya
putran dasa dasa balaha
putran dasa dasa bala
aji janan navaman
aji janam navaman
pitu sarvatma sampada
pitu sarvatma sampada
jisuka uvacha Ekaka Shasta Krishnasya Putran Dasa Dasa Balaha Ajijanan Navaman Pitu Sarvatma Sampada
Ladies.
Let me read the chapter summary and then word for word, and then I'll just read the next two texts. Chapter 61, Lord Balaram slays Rukmini. This chapter lists Lord Sri Krishna's sons, grandsons, and other progeny. It also describes how Lord Balaram killed Rukmini at Aniruddha's marriage ceremony, and how Lord Krishna arranged for his sons and daughters to be married. Not understanding the full truth about Sri Krishna, each of his wives thought that since he remained constantly in her palace, she must be his favorite wife. They were all entranced by the Lord's beauty and his loving conversations with them, but they could not agitate his mind with the charming gestures of their eyebrows or any other means. Having attained as their husband Lord Krishna, whom even demigods like Lord Brahma find it difficult to know in truth, the Lord's queens were always eager to associate with him. Thus, although each of them had millions of maidservants, they would personally render him menial service. Each of Lord Krishna's wives had 10 sons, who in turn each fathered many sons and grandsons. In the womb of Rukmini's daughter, Rukmavati, Padyumna fathered Aniruddha. Though Sri Krishna had disrespected Rukmini, to please his sister, Rukmini gave his daughter in marriage to Padyumna and his granddaughter to Aniruddha. Bali, the son of Kritavarma, married Rukmini's daughter, Karumati. At Aniruddha's wedding, Lord Baladev, Sri Krishna, and other Yadavas went to Rukmini's palace in the city of Bhojakata. After the ceremony, Rukmini challenged Lord Baladev to a game of dice. In the first match, Rukmini defeated Baladev, whereupon the king of Kalinga laughed at the Lord for displaying all his teeth. Lord Baladev won the next match, but Rukmini refused to concede defeat. A voice then spoke from the sky announcing that Baladev had in fact won. But Rukmini, encouraged by wicked kings, offended Lord Baladev by saying that while he was certainly expert at tending cows, he knew nothing of playing dice. Thus insulted, Lord Baladev angrily struck Rukmini dead with his club. The king of Kalinga tried to flee, but Lord Baladev seized him and knocked out all of his teeth. Then the other offensive kings, their arms, thighs, and heads wounded by Baladev's blows, fled in all directions, bleeding profusely. Lord Sri Krishna expressed neither approval nor disapproval of his brother-in-law's death, fearing he would jeopardize his loving ties with either Rukmini or Baladev. Lord Baladev and the other Yadavas then seated Aniruddha and his bride on a fine chariot, and they all set off for Dwarka. So text one, the word for word, Sri Suku Vacha, Sri Sukadev Goswami said, Eka Ikasya, one of them, Ta Ve Krishnasya, of Lord Krishna, Putran's sons, Dasa, 10 each, Abala, the wives, Ajijanam, gave birth to Anavaman, an inferior Pitu of their to their father, Sarva, all in all, Atma, his personal Sampada opulences. Translation, Sukadev Goswami said, each of Lord Krishna's wives gave birth to 10 sons who were not less than their father, having all his personal opulence. Report, Lord Krishna had 16,108 wives, and thus this verse indicates that the Lord begot 161,080 sons. Text 2. Because each of the princesses saw that Lord Achyuta never left her palace, each thought herself the Lord's favorite. These women did not understand the full truth about him. Report, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur notes that Lord Krishna would leave the palaces only with the permission of his wives, and thus each one considered herself his favorite. Text number 3. The Supreme Lord's wives were fully enchanted by his lovely, lotus-like face, his long arms and large eyes. His loving glances imbued with laughter and his charming talks with them. But with all their charms, these ladies could not conquer the mind of the all-powerful Lord. Report, the previous verse stated that Lord Krishna's queens could not understand the truth of the Lord. This truth is explained in the present verse. The Lord is all-powerful, full in himself, with infinite opulences. Om Gyana Timanandasya Ganam Vinashavakaya Chakshu Nirutamina Tasma Shri Hidavaya Namaha. For most people, not only people that we may interact with in this world, but most people on planets throughout the universe, if they heard this description that we've just read about Lord Sri Krishna, they would find it hard to accept that this is a description of Parameshwara, the Supreme Controller. Now, I say Parameshwara and distinguish it from Bhagavan because most people, as I said, not only in this world, but in all heavenly planets, all throughout the universe, they accept the Supreme Controller, the Supreme Creator of this material world to be something other than the loving husband of 16,108 queens or 161,080 sons and family members. And to engage in the type of loving affairs that are described here, conversation, laughter, charming talks. These things are absent in the conception of the Supreme Lord, who's all-powerful and the Supreme Controller of everything. This conception of God as the Controller is one truth about the Supreme Lord. It's not that the Supreme Lord is not all those things. He is a Supreme Controller. But that's not the complete picture of the Supreme Lord. And Srimad Bhagavatam is presenting us a more complete picture, the more complete picture of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's more than Parameshwar. He's Bhagavan. It's described in these verses that the Lord is full of infinite opulences. Parasara Muni has given us a definition of Bhagavan where he describes six types of opulences. Beauty, wealth, fame, knowledge, strength, renunciation. These personal characteristics are displayed by Krishna in his pastimes, and that's the more complete picture we get of God. It's not contradictory. If we take into consideration the philosophy that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given us. Just a few days ago, we had the fortunate opportunity to celebrate the appearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And on that day, at one point, I had the fortune to be with a group of devotees. We were chanting bhajans about Lord Chaitanya. And we were the bhajans were describing how he's the loving son of Mother Sachi. He's a loving son. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, Parameshwara, the supreme controller of everything, but he's the son of Mother Sachi, and he's dancing to the songs of the women of Nadia, just like a toy, just like their toy. He's dancing to their singing. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the loving son of Mother Sachi, he appeared and he gave us this philosophy of achinta bhedabhe tattva. He reconciled this difference between the dancing mimai to the village women's songs and the nature of the supreme controller of this universe. Here's a philosophy of achinta bhedabhe tattva clarifies how Lord Krishna can be the supreme controller of everything, yet be engaged in the type of activities that are described in the verse here today. As described here in the second verse we read, because each of the princesses saw Lord Achyuta never leave her palace, each thought herself the Lord's favorite. These women did not understand the full truth about him. So yes, they had their loving exchanges as described here, but that's not the full truth about him. The full truth is that, at least partially the full truth, because we can't claim to speak the full truth about the Supreme Lord, especially me. But there are truths that achinta bhedabhe tattva reconciles. One is tattva, and the other is lila. Both are truths. Both are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But they're different aspects of the full truth about him. In tattva, we get the understanding of the supreme nature of the Lord. And this is there even from the most basic of literatures. In Bhagavad Gita, we find a description of both lila and tattva in the Lord's dealings with Arjuna. When the Lord displays the universal form, that's in the 10th chapter, isn't it? 10th chapter, is universal form? 11th chapter. In the 11th chapter, the universal form is described with many mouths and eyes and heads and fiercely looking this way and that way and soldiers being crushed by his teeth. That is a description of tattva. That's the supreme nature, the supreme controller of everything. A vision of that, that aspect of God. Krishna is revealing himself in that way to Arjuna. Now, of course, many people take that display as being the full truth of the Lord. And those are the people that may be bewildered by this type of description that we read in the verses today. But that is only an aspect of the Supreme Lord. In that 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna expresses how he felt upon seeing that magnificent form of the Lord. He felt first some fear, then he felt some alienation from his relationship with Krishna, or his lila, the loving exchange he had with Krishna. He felt, oh, I must have offended you by sitting on the same bedstead or engaging in intimate talks with you. I'm sorry, I didn't know that you were the Supreme Lord. The loving feelings were shrunk by the majesty and the awe of the universal form. But Krishna, upon seeing that reaction of Arjuna, told him, don't worry. And again, he showed him his two-handed form, where he could engage in lila or loving exchanges with Krishna. So even from the very beginning of our study in spiritual life, we're presented with at least two of these aspects of the Absolute Truth: lila and tattva. These verses today also give us some glimpse into that. Even though there were 16,108 queens of Krishna, and they lived in all these palaces in Dwarka, I mean, that in itself is, and the Lord engaged in these kind of intimate loving exchanges with each and every one of them, as well as 10 sons of each and all of their sons and family members. I mean, that alone, display of that alone has such scope and majesty and completeness that it could only be done by God himself. But there's more. There's a fuller truth and picture about Krishna that those queens couldn't realize. But just to show how it doesn't matter, the Lord's position doesn't matter, that fully opulent, majestic, awe-inspiring aspect of the Lord, it doesn't matter to the queens. It didn't matter that that wasn't at the forefront of their consciousness. What mattered to them, the completeness of lila for them, was simply that they could enjoy the type of loving exchanges with Krishna. That in itself is complete. That is the stage that we are encouraged to worship the Lord on. We do have a basic understanding and feeling of respect and awe in the beginnings of our worship as devotees in this Krishna consciousness movement. Particularly if we take the deity worship, for instance. Prabhupada instructed us that our worship should be composed of many of the types of respectful and guarded and honoring types of mood that we find absent in the worship of truly advanced Vaishnavas. We would, for instance, never consider worshiping the deity like Vamsidas Babaji it was. We used to worship his deity in a very familial and almost what we might would consider based on our training, offensive kind of way. You just take him for snan and put him in the Ganga and pull him out and deal with him in ways in which were very, we might consider irreverent. But are we to assume that simply the awe and reverence which we're taught to worship the deity is a full expression of worship of the deity or love for one's own yesterday? I think that would be short-sighted in our view if we took that position. And it might lead to offense in understanding Vaishnavas. And that's also an important difference that we need to understand. Vaishnavas and their behavior as opposed to what we think and consider a saintly person to be. There's a statement about Lord Nityananda that we shouldn't disrespect him even if we see him going into the liquor shop. We can't understand his lila. But we approach more on the basis of tattva and respectful understanding, respectful behavior, offering obeisances, so that we don't commit offense in areas which we can't understand. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he gave us this achinta bheda bheda tattva, and by this philosophy, we need to apply this type of an approach so that when we study the Shastra, when we hear the Lord's activities, that we understand the full truth about him. So those are some underlying thoughts to these verses here today. Does anyone have any other contributions they'd like to make to this discussion we can have, trying to understand the nature of the Lord? John Austin?
It's a question, is that all right?
Okay.
On the sadhana platform, Vaidhi sadhana platform, how does the devotee experience Krishna's reciprocation with love? And how does he express his own love for Krishna without the kind of facility that manifests the stage of bhava or thing?
Well, Srila Prabhupada gave an example involving deity worship like that, of how one feels the reciprocation of the Lord. Again, our instruction for deity worship is approached with awe and reverence in the beginning. And that means so many rules and regulations which are there, as described in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, in Matthew Devotion. But Prabhupada said that when we approach like that, when we do things like that, then we get the feeling in our heart, oh, I could do it this way, and it would be nicer. It would be more pleasurable to the Lord. Whether it's how you drape the garland, or how you do the abhishek. Let me do it this way. Just like yesterday, when we were bathing Lord Jagannath. Generally speaking, I think we all have this experience. When we do abhishek, and we bathe, you did it yesterday. Did anyone notice how cold the water was? The water was cold. And I said to Badra and others, that water's so cold. Generally, the water's warm when you do the abhishek. So you may start doing it cold. Of course, they had some reason. They said some reason why it was cold. It was one of the lila things. Well, the Lord has his lila of, you know, getting sick, and so he has to be bathed in cold water. So, okay, it's part of the lila. But generally speaking, when we do abhishek, the water is warm. But it was noticeably cold yesterday. So we might think, no. It shouldn't be cold. It should be warm. Or let me do it this way. Let me do it in a better way. And Krishna, that's Prabhupada said, that's Krishna's reciprocation, you know, with us. That we're learning to love him more, and we're out of love, we want to do it better. And the Lord reciprocates like that, you know, it's done nicely, and then we encourage more and more to exchange on, not just, the Lord was dressed, the Lord was bathed. But the Lord was dressed with some love and some affection, and there's some reciprocation and encouragement that the devotee receives in that way. So I think in the beginning stages, even by Vaidhi Bhakti, we get that type of reciprocation, which is a reciprocation of love. Any other questions? Another question?
In my mind, I was thinking when you were saying Tapa and Leela, it reminded me of Sri Prabhupada talking about sentiment and philosophy and sentiment.
Mm.
And I was thinking maybe the philosophy would kind of match up with the tattva and sentiment with the lila. Is that?
Yeah, in their best, in their pure forms, yes. Tattva is a philosophical, more philosophical understanding of the nature of the Lord, the truth about him in terms of how he's manifesting everything, how he's controlling everything, how he's Parameshwara, the supreme controller of everything. We understand that philosophically. These are broad generalizations. And Leela touches our heart, obviously, because it's the loving exchanges between the Lord and his devotees, which are front and center. And those happen once the philosophical understandings of the Parameshwara, that recedes a bit. And it has to, because we'll be just like Arjuna. You know, we understand the truth and we're like, you know, how can we have, you know, any kind of a personal loving relationship with the grandeur of the Lord? So that subsides in Leela, and as you say, sentiment, love is what comes to the forefront, how the Lord exchanges with his devotees. So that's, You got Nicole?
Actually, I was thinking of the same question, Keshava Prabhu. Thinking, does a Chintya Veda Veda Tattva imply the distinction between Tattva and Rasa? But I can say an example of a Chintya Veda Veda Tattva the living entity, the jiva, is equal in quality but not equal in quantity to the supreme. Is that an example of a Chintya Veda Veda Tattva? What?
Well, yeah, simultaneously
okay.
One and different.
Or one in quality but different in quantity. Okay, so but that doesn't necessarily.
No, that's not the extent, the full extent of a Chintya Veda Veda. It applies in so many different ways, resolving all kinds of contradictions that may be there from the material point of view. Well, how can this and this be the same? Well, a Chintya Veda Veda, the Lord Chaitanya's philosophy reconciles all these inconceivable differences.
So then it couldn't constitute the distinction between rasa and tattva?
Yeah, or that we're talking about the same Supreme Lord, yes. That he is not only the supreme controller of everything, but he's also our loving friend, our loving child, our lover, these kind of things.
Okay.
It's a broad philosophical approach that resolves all these apparent contradictions.
Okay.
Is that?
Yeah, I think I got it. Yeah.
The statement that Sukadeva Goswami is making, these women did not understand the full truth about him. It seems like it's not true. I mean, I don't want to put. But these women did know the truth about him.
Well, I think that I would say, and who am I to say, but the point being that receded, just like Mother Yashoda. When Mother Yashoda, Krishna revealed to her within his mouth the entire universal form. And when she saw that universal form, I mean the entire universe in his mouth, she started thinking in all kinds of philosophical ways about Krishna and who he was. But then the rasa, or the relationship that she exchanged with Krishna, again became prominent, and she forgot all about seeing that universal form now. So did she know? Yeah. Did she know? It didn't matter. No, she didn't know. It wasn't at the forefront of her consciousness. It couldn't be, because the love that she exchanged with Krishna was a more complete being. So in that sense, they didn't understand the full truth about him. But in another sense, how could any living entity be exchanging with Krishna in such a pure way of love if they didn't have the background, the purity of knowledge of his position as the Supreme Lord? But obviously for these women in Dwarka, his queens, that wasn't at the forefront of their consciousness. They didn't know in that regard. All they knew was their loving relationship with Krishna. And that's all they had to know. It wasn't like it's some type of imperfection that they didn't know, or that wasn't at the forefront of their consciousness. Any other points?
I was listening the other night, and Prabhupada was talking about the universal form. And he said, Krishna is so kind to his devotees that he comes in 3 feet size, so you can dress him. He said, if you tried to dress the universal form, the whole world's cloth factory would fail. So that's the mercy of the Lord and his archa, is that he comes so we can handle him and touch him and make stuff for him and bathe him and do all these things, because otherwise we can't approach. But
right. And it doesn't mean he's not that universal form,
right,
because he comes like that. He's not limiting himself when he comes as in the archa vigraha. Thank you. Any other points?
I never did so much deity worship, so that one thought that occurs to me in answering a question that I asked of you is this verse from the 11th canto, 2nd chapter, 42nd verse. It describes an analogy. I'll just recite it. Bhakti Pradeshkano Bhavo Virakya Anitra Chasha Shika Ipakala Padjamana Sha Ipatashka Shush Pushti Pushti Shudapayo Nugasam. And it parallels the devotional process with the eating process. So bhakti, or devotion, and that, and then realization of the presence of the Lord in one's life, and then
detachment from other things occurs simultaneously and increasingly, just as with the eating process, one he first gets satisfaction. Oh, okay. Yeah, satisfaction, and then comes nourishment, and then eradication of hunger. So, satisfaction from, there's this bliss that comes, you know, I mean, where does it come from? You know, it's coming from Krishna because he's pleased.
Mm.
And there's one lecture Prabhupada gave, what was it, 74 in Ahmedabad, I think, that he describes how the king has many servants, and the business of the servant is to please the king. And so for devotees, our business is to please Krishna. And when Krishna's pleased, we're pleased.
Mm.
That. And so there's that, and there's that very prominent reciprocation. And then the presence of the Lord has just so many incidents in a devotee's life where, you know, they experience the hand of the Lord, you know, in so many different ways. You know, it's like one unique situation after another. How else could it have taken place? You know, it's not like our imagination. And then this perception, you know, that, you know, we lose, you know, this fascination with the material energy, and it starts mm-hmm. shifting gradually, you know, as the years roll by. We're not so impressed. Things that used to, you know, it's not, you know, okay, if I can use it in Krishna's service, then it's exciting. Otherwise, forget it. You know, I'm not really interested in it. So that's something that we can see how Krishna is actually helping us. The process is working. And we're, you know, more than likely as our, well, this is the way it works, you know, as the anarthas are eradicated by the process, we experience more bliss, we experience more of Krishna's presence in our life, and we're more and more detached from other things.
Actually, you know, this, you make a very good point. This experience of reciprocation from Krishna. I was just thinking about that the other day. It must have had something to do with the festivals we're going to, but it seems like this is unique to devotional service, that we get, that we experience this reciprocation with Krishna. Only devotees really get that type of reciprocation. Personal reciprocation, obviously, if you worship the demigods, then you can get so many boons and things like that. And that's a kind of reciprocation. It was almost like an impersonal kind of thing. Personal reciprocation is almost like the exclusive realm of devotional service. When we get that kind of feeling, we do some service, and then we see in our lives how Krishna is reciprocating. That's the life of bhakti. You know, that's the life, this reciprocation. And we just read in these verses here today how the Lord is reciprocating as a husband, you know. This is what a husband would do, you know. You know, loving talks, you know, these kind of laughing and joking. So, I mean, you get that kind of reciprocation. You can have that kind of reciprocation with Krishna, with God. You can have that, but it's within the realm. If it's not exclusively the realm of bhakti, it's certainly a prominent feature of bhakti. This type of reciprocation that we get from. And it's at all levels, as you point out. It's in the level of beginning and deity worship. It's in the level of everything in our lives. So, it's a very good point.
Actually, it's interesting because, you know, the devotion corresponds with pleasure, and then the direct experience of the Supreme Lord corresponds with nourishment, and then detachment from other things corresponds with relief from hunger.
Yeah.
Because we're satisfied. We don't need it. We enjoy our senses.
Right. It's the difference between ritual and devotion. we take a ritualistic, like we did so many rituals. We bathe the deity with rituals. You know, it's a ritual. And if there's no loving reciprocation there, it remains ritual. And we can do rituals, you know, all day long, you know, and think that we're wonderful or whatever. But reciprocation with Krishna, the type of things we do are not rituals. They're loving exchanges. And it results in those three kind of things that you see. So anything else? Thank you, Ashima. Thank you, Ashima. Thank you, Ashima. Thank you, Ashima.